Hello and welcome to the IC Companies and Markets podcast. I'm Mark Robinson, filling in for John Heumann, who's away on vacation at the moment. I guess most of our readers would have noticed a fair bit of comment in the financial pages this week in relation to the unprecedented bull run, which is about to reach its 10th anniversary in the United States, probably today, I think. And of course, it's interesting because the UK equities have been on a bit of a tear as well. The justification, the economic justification for outperformance in either case is probably open to question. It's true that in the case of UK equities, valuations aren't quite so stretched as the benchmarks across the water, though that largely reflects the high incidence of highly rated tech plays in US indices. Anyway, what we do know is that the market will snap into reverse at some point, but the duration, extent of that correction is impossible to predict or quantify at this stage, obviously. But a feature of the stock market cycle, one that we'll all be aware of, no doubt, is that small caps tend to outperform during bull runs. Conversely, unfortunately, they tend to suffer disproportionately when markets turn. So we've decided to dedicate this podcast to this end of the market, and our listeners will be glad to hear that we'll be speaking to the IC's Simon Thompson, a market expert in this field. But for the moment, I'm joined in the studio by Harriet Klarfelt, who's going to run over a couple of this week's tip updates. Hello, Harriet. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm fine. Thank you.
I guess we'll go over a couple of these tip updates before we segue through to Simon there. And at least one of them, I would think, falls under the small cap, or actually it's an AIM stock, but it's of a reasonable size. And we're talking about Traxys here. Could you explain a little bit about the company?
Sure. So, yes, Traxys is technically a small cap. It's got a market cap of around £190 million at the moment, I think. It's a transportation technology company, so it provides software and services to the traffic data and transportation industries.
And that includes the rail network as well?
It does. So it's split really into two business areas, and one of them is rail technology and services, and the other is traffic and data services. It probably doesn't sound that exciting as a company, but it's actually already outperforming market expectations.
Well, I'm sure when we're all sitting in traffic at some point or waiting outside Sutton Station with
yeah,
the requisite
you might feel
we can at least track this.
Exactly. They're making the industry a little bit more exciting.
A little bit more efficient, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's really what they're trying to do. They're trying to help companies in the space improve their service offering to customers. The news this week was basically a pretty good trading update from them for the full year. They've said that revenues will beat market expectations at around 40 million, up 16%. And they also expect cash profits and adjusted profit to come in ahead of expectations and ahead, obviously, year on year as well.
And so the shares were marked up on this news, I take it?
Yeah, the shares were marked up, I think, nearly a tenth on the day.
And they're about a third above our original tip?
They are, exactly. So it's all looking pretty good. And I think more broadly, you know, we see Traxys as a company for which there's really good demand, not just in the UK, but overseas. They've got a good North American operation. So obviously a diversified offering as well. And a pretty good net cash position. I think they had a cash balances of around £22 million at the year end. So
yeah, there's definitely a structural growth story there.
Exactly.
It feeds into the whole smart cities program.
It does. And actually, I think we learnt last year they made an investment in a company called Vivacity Labs, which does sort of data analysis in smart cities. It's a sort of data provider for smart cities. So there's that angle as well, which is very interesting.
Yeah, well, certainly the tip's done well up to now, and we can see there's further growth opportunities in this space as well.
Yeah,
probably a little bit difficult to value, but we have seen there's been at least a couple of markups from the sell side.
Exactly. So I think FinCap is an example of a broker which has actually lifted its earnings expectations for 2018. I mean, still Traxys is trading on quite a high multiple, but as you said, it is quite difficult to value it, really. I think it was at 28 times forward earnings when we wrote the piece. That said, you know, we have seen really strong momentum, so for the time being that does to an extent look justified. I mean, in the past Traxys has had some issues, and I think we mentioned this in our original tip. There was a problem with the Department for Transport's rail franchising competition timetable, And that did have a bit of an adverse impact on Traxys's revenues last year.
Well, but Traxys was essentially reliant on this process going through.
It had been a bit too reliant, I think, is how it felt. But they actually managed to soften the blow last year. And by last year, I'm not talking about the year for which the most recent trading update was for.
Sure.
But it managed to soften the blow by focusing on other project wins. And, you know, it has sort of seen, I suppose, the error of its ways in that sense.
Okay. Well, it's certainly one to watch there. The other company that we'd focus on today, I know it's a firm that you're pretty familiar with, Keyword Studios.
Yep. So Keyword Studios is quite a bit bigger than Traxys.
It doesn't really fit
it's not really a small cap
category.
But it's over a billion. It has a market cap of over a billion now. And Keywords supplies technical services to the video games industry. And the news this week was that it has acquired something called Gobo. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Which comprises two sort of subsidiary businesses called Studio Gobo and Electric Square. The deal is going to be worth up to £26 million, which actually for Keywords is quite a lot. It is a very acquisitive company, but Keywords, I think two most recent acquisitions before this were around £1 million and £10 million or euros. I can't quite remember. But
they're just buying software licenses, essentially.
Well, they're sort of buying businesses which will complement their own, typically. So Gobo should enhance Keywords video games development capabilities. And it operates globally. It's based in Brighton and Hove. It should sort of help Keywords engineering service line, which is something it's been focusing on. I mean, this does follow on from a string of quite interesting news from Keywords. So it launched its own investment wing a few weeks ago called Keywords Ventures. And it's obviously just seeking out growth wherever it can. Momentum is probably the operative word for Keywords.
Again, another stock that's very difficult to value by conventional metrics. I guess looking at cash flows for one thing.
Exactly.
The rate of sales growth. A lot of that's bought in as well. I know John will regret not being in the studio. He had a misspent youth in this area of the market.
Yeah, he enjoys video games. Talking about video games. Yeah,
he does at that. But the tip has performed pretty well, considering that was pitched when February.
I think we first tipped it in February, and it's up about 25%.
Up a quarter, which is good going. So we're still confident going forward?
Still confident going forwards. I mean, as you said, you know, it is highly rated. It's difficult to know how to rate it. But increasingly, we are seeing other video games companies in the market. So we've got Sumo Group, which is also one of our tips. There's Frontier Development. So at least we have more and more companies to compare it to on the London market.
All right, Harriet, I think that ties all that up for the moment as we just segue through to Simon now, who's waiting for us in his Kent readout. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're happy to be joined here by Simon Thompson, who is our small caps expert, and he brings a great deal of expertise in other areas as well. But Simon, trimmed and tanned, terrific, back from France. Did you enjoy yourself?
I'm definitely tanned, and I definitely enjoyed myself. So it was fantastic.
The trim is open to question, though, given the Cannon Bear and claret. Never mind.
I think the trim has been open to question for the last few years, to be honest.
Not to worry. As I've mentioned to the listeners, we've dedicated this week's podcast to talk about the small cap market, and specifically the dangers posed by any near or medium term correction in markets. I mean, you would have noticed yourself this week the number of articles in the financial press about the unprecedented bull run in the States.
Which I think is going to continue, by the way.
I do,
and that's important for the simple fact that the 2009 bull market started from the States. The problem for the bear market was States completely with the subprime crisis and mortgage crisis. And if you're going to take a view on global equity markets, you've got to take a view on the US market, since it's the largest one. And also the fact that there's a little statistic which people really don't pay much attention to, but a bear market always happens in tandem with a recession, and that means a US recession too. And it also happens when there's been a spike in the oil price. And at the moment, the US economy growing at 3% this year, every 1% of the GDP growth in the US equates to about 3% earnings growth or thereabouts. So the US economy growth this year is worth at least 9% of EPS growth alone in the States.
Yeah, I guess we can say that the oil price has stabilized, but you wouldn't characterize it as a spike.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you look at the chart from 2014, when it was roughly $100, and it'd been flatlining for months on end, and then it collapsed, started 2016 to about $27, and now it's bounced back to about $72. You say, well, okay, you've had a significant rally since that low point, but I wouldn't classify it as the type of spike that's been accompanied with bear markets in the past. And I've studied bear markets quite extensively in some of my books. And my own personal view is that the rally in the oil price hasn't ended. We're just at a consolidation stage at the moment.
Well, I guess you could say as well, when you look at the US too, a lot of the stimulus measures being brought through by the Trump administration, specifically relating to the infrastructure development in the United States, those have yet to gain congressional approval. Likewise, I think the defense budgets have got the nod from Congress, but the rise in aggregate demand that these would underpin, that's yet to really flow through to the US economy. I mean, what we've seen so far is a stimulus based on his tax reforms.
No, absolutely. But it's also interesting that the highest growth, if you look at the S&P 500 EPS figures for the Q1, Q2 quarters this year, the highest growth has come from the tech sector and healthcare and financial. And also those sectors have performed rather well as well this year. So if you take the view that the US economy, the 3% growth rate this year, is not going to end anytime soon, and basically 9% of the earnings growth that's embedded into the 20-odd% earnings growth forecast for EPS and the S&P 500 this year and next, half of that is actually just GDP growth alone, then you've got a situation that you can see earnings actually continuing to rise. And to put the valuation into some perspective,
I think I made the point in last week's magazine as well. If you do strip out solely the tech stocks from the US industries, then the rates of earnings growth seem far more realistic when set against the company's performance itself. So I guess it's not exactly a two-speed market, but I think if you're looking at the US economy as a whole, it's worth just looking at the effects once you strip out those massive growth tech stocks.
No, I could completely agree on that. Well, you've also got to bear in mind that if you look at the global indices, 23% of the global indices are actually tech stocks. So it's not a small sector alone. So you can strip it out, but it's almost a quarter of the global indices. But in terms of the valuation, bull markets basically peak on excessive valuations. And at the moment, the S&P 500 is trading on roughly 20 times historic 12-month trailing earnings. And if you look at forecasts for Q3, Q4, then, it's good, and into next year as well, then, the forwards multiple on a 12-month basis is roughly 17 times, embedding 20% earnings growth. And as I said, half of that earnings growth is actually just coming from GDP growth alone. People are getting carried away with the fact that this bull market is now, the longest running. It's exceeded the 1990-2000 dot-com boom bull markets.
Well, there's been any number of comparisons made there too, and both you and I are old enough to remember what happened then, but the circumstances are vastly different now, I'd have thought.
Well, especially because the tech stocks now make decent profits. Some are very, very highly rated, but they are profitable, whereas, back then it was
just a jamboree, giving out scrip left and right just to finance a thing. There was no value. There was no conventional valuation metrics being used for many of the startup companies then. Nothing in the way of cash flow or profits.
No, I mean, analysts were actually making up terms. So, EBITDA, so loss,
yeah,
before interest, taxation, depreciation became one of the buzzwords then, and it's just plain ridiculous. Whereas now we're focusing on actual profit growth, very strong profit growth, And given, you know, the size of the U.S. economy, you've got to make some pretty big assumptions about this week being the top of the bull market.
Yeah.
And as I said, recession, oil price hike, those two are major ones. I can see this actually running. And if it's going to run, that's actually good for European indices going into the autumn. Because, you know, what happens in the US, you know, has a knock-on effect to the rest of the world. And which is why I'm actually, you know, still positive on UK equity market in specific areas.
I guess the one imponderable is linked to interest rates. Now, the prospect is that they'll firm up over time, but they're still at historically low levels. So that mightn't be such an issue as some people have made out.
Well, again, if you look at the US, its 10-year bond yields are 2.83%, and looking at the screen at the moment, and that's about 25 basis points above 2-year bond yields, so the yield curve's pretty flat.
Yeah.
That compares with 1.9% forward dividend yields in the S&P 500. So you've only got an opportunity cost of less than 1% between 10-year bond yields and the dividend yields to actually make through capital gains by buying an index tracker in the S&P 500, which in terms of opportunity cost isn't a huge one when we're looking at earnings growth over the next 12 months forecast of 20% and, you know, with a realistic possibility of pretty strong growth in Q3, Q4 this year.
Oh, there you go. Equities are still looking good in that base. I guess, you know, after the years of QE, a lot of the old assumptions no longer apply. But what I did mention when I started this podcast is that during bear markets, small caps tend to suffer disproportionately. But, of course, the converse is also true. They tend to outperform when markets are rising. Now, with that in mind, I know that you see that the UK small caps, you've described this as a two-way market at the moment. Could you expand on that a little bit, please?
Right, I mean, totally. I mean, if you look at the best performers, worst performers this year, it's never been more marked that if you look at the FTSE Small Cap Index, you know, your worst performance is just horrendous. You've got the likes of Countrywide, Carpet Right, Mothercare, Debenhams. Anything with a retail focus is, you know, in the top 10 worst performers, and some of the losses are horrendous. 60 to 80% of the share prices since the start of January. And, you know, there's a sound reason for that. These companies are not only fighting cost pressures, but they're fighting consumer that's maybe a bit wary with, you know, the Brexit negotiations ongoing in March 2019 looming.
Well, in the case of Countrywide, is surely a catalyst there is a technological change as well, because I think they've outstretched themselves trying to predict how that market's going to unfold.
Well, exactly, and it's, you know, it's not the only player that you've seen. Foxtons as well,
yeah,
being absolutely hammered. Admittedly, that's got a high percentage of London exposure to its sales mix, and so it's actually heavily geared to, you know, the top end of the London market. But I completely agree with you that, you know, technological change has impacted that company.
And there were some fairly specific issues with Countrywide as well, having a former chief executive with no experience of the real estate market.
It doesn't help.
It doesn't help, does it? As bad as that market is, I mean, you know, it's linked to what we were saying before. Again, you could say Countrywide and everyone in that space, and they've obviously been affected by the downturn, particularly in London, but they're also fighting technological change and or the evolution. So you always get, as we say, these tech companies are building and building, but you always get value destruction as well. In a sense, you could say it's part of the normal evolutionary processes of business.
Which comes to my next trait of the this two-way market that we're seeing in small caps. If you look at the leaders in the FTSE AIM 100 index, up there, top is Blue Prism, which is artificial intelligence. I remember covering this stock when it floated back in 2016, interviewed the directors in the summer when they had the amazing results, and, you know, it's a £60 million company. I thought, wow, this could be really exciting, but I'd like to see this company, you know, land some contracts, which, you know, it's done again and again and again since then. Well, the stock price isn't a pound, which it was back in the summer of 2016. It's £21.50. It's now a £1 billion company. And that's because people have gotten really excited about artificial intelligence and, you know, the uses in the financial sector, banking sector. And but that's not the only one. You know, there's other companies, like software companies, up in the, you know, top 10, top 20 list of the best performers this year. The other take for me about it is that you've got companies like Burford Capital, which is litigation finance, which, you know, stock price up 63% this year, ongoing re-rating there, and, you know, it's done incredibly well.
I think barely a month goes past now without a new entrant to that market as well. I was just speaking to Harriet Clarfelt before, and it's an area that she's au fait with at the moment, and that is a building subsector within the economy.
Well, exactly. And the interesting thing there is you've got demand for it. That's the most important thing. And you've got untapped demand, because up until, you know, the last few years, it's been US litigation is where it's all been focused and where they've made the money. But if you actually open it up to a wider audience, then, you know...
As has happened in the US.
Well, exactly. So... which comes to some of the traits I actually look for companies in this two-speed market. First is a technological bias. Second is some overseas exposure, so it's not all UK domestic.
Yeah.
Thirdly, pricing power. I'm looking for barriers to entry as well, which protects profit margins. And I'm looking for some decent operating leverage. So earnings per share profits will actually increase faster than sales growth, as, you know, a higher proportion of the gross margin earned actually drops down to the bottom line as sales rise. I'm also looking at companies that do well in a low bond yield environment, because, you know, okay, US interest rates, 10-year bond yield curve is 2.83% and it's about 1.26% in the UK. But by historic standards, that's very, very low. So if you're looking at companies that are growing their earnings strongly in an environment of relatively low growth generally domestically, then people will actually focus on those companies and warm to them. And that's what's happened with those. I mean, the other interesting thing is that I've noted that on the leaderboard as well, you've got like the Faroe Petroleum, Hurricane Energy, which are oil price plays rather than technological plays. So in effect, they're actually playing the global economy, the oil price, and the fact that the oil price has done so well this year is actually telling you something about the strength of the global economy, which in turn is telling you something about how this bull market is going to run.
So the optimism is the core of the day by the sound of it.
I don't have a shortage of actually finding decent companies at decent
guarded
prices.
Optimism, we'll say.
I mean, it takes time to do so, but especially in the tech sector, you know, in the recent weeks, I've written about Bioquell, which is a biodecontamination company. It's done fantastically well. It's got 80% of its sales overseas, so it's benefited from sterling weakness, but also it's benefited from structural demands, increased regulations, etc. Companies like Cape Technology, that's cybersecurity. Well, you know, cybercrime is never going to go away, and people are going to increasingly look to protect their data. BATM, Advanced Communications, they've got results next week. It's a favorite from last year's bargain share portfolio. Shares doubled, but they're doing some smashing things. There's lots of small cap companies out there that, you know, have got decent pipelines of business, which de-risk their earnings. They're benefiting from overseas exposure, so it's not all UK-based. I'm quite positive, Mark.
And a number of them as well are in markets that have got, as you say, these underlying structural growth drivers as well. So even if there is a slight reversal in the economy, in proportional terms, those markets are going to expand. It's interesting, really, because volatility returned to markets at the first quarter of this year. And there's been prevailing economic uncertainty, I guess you could say. But you've recently highlighted a contrarian view of this as well, because the economic uncertainty has led to...
It's led to deferred investments, especially in certain areas of the UK, industrial sectors and service sectors, home investors and global investors sit on sidelines, wait for, an outcome around Brexit. The contrarian view there is that if we do actually have some form of amicable Brexit being delivered, then the unpredictability we've got embedded in valuations at the moment will unwind. You'll see companies and the boards playing catch up by actually committing to investments. And that's going to see, a rebound in UK GDP. I mean, GDP isn't bad. It was, 1.7% last year. It's going to be roughly the same this year for the UK. Okay, that's lagging behind the US. And as I said before, you can actually see how GDP growth actually translates into earnings per share growth for corporates. But if we do actually have a decent Brexit and, we've got 7 months to actually do a deal, then the relative valuations that we're seeing at the moment, UK stock market is close to the historic lows that it's not seen since the 1990s, when you actually compare it to other world markets. As I said, the S&P 500 at the moment is trading on 20 times trailing earnings for 12 months to end of June. The UK FTSE 100 index is 6-7 points behind that. There's always been a gap, but, that's an extreme gap. And, you can do the same calculation if you look at the Russell 2000 index or small caps in the US against, small cap index here. So it's not just the blue chip stocks that are trading on historically low relative valuations. It's also some small caps as well.
That's interesting as well. So we've got a lot of potential capital that's being locked up at the moment, sentiment this side of Brexit. Looking at things in the whole, how do you characterise the small cap market at the moment?
There's bargains out there. I remember covering a few weeks ago, 1PM, it's a finance company that lends to small and medium-sized enterprises, and it's delivered record profits. It's trading on about 7.5 times earnings. It doesn't have any balance sheet worries. Delivers a decent dividend yield, low price to book value, and if you're willing to take the view, contrarian view that I've just outlined, that Brexit will actually be sorted come March next year, then that stock is not going to be trading at 7 times earnings.
Yeah.
In 12 months' time, and it's not the only one, but there's also other companies that are doing great business overseas. For the Alpha report I produced start of last week, I was absolutely blown away by the number of companies this small cap is talking to, high percentage of which are actually overseas. And it's doing deals globally.
Yeah.
And that's not just one company. So there's lots of small caps, overseas exposure, benefiting from the growth in the global economy, also benefiting from currency tailwinds as well. The doom and gloom that's, we've seen for parts of this year, which is one reason why the UK stock market is, relatively underperformed its US peers. The US stock market's making highs and, we're not back to the highs made back in January. I think the doom and gloom is actually overstated. And
okay.
We could have a positive outcome in the autumn.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, thanks very much. I do actually know which Alpha, which stock you're looking at for the Alpha reporters there, but I'll keep stumm for the time being. That's about it, Simon. So thanks very much for your contributions there on that small cap debate. Other than Simon's take today, this week's magazine contains some thoughts on Z-scores by Philip Ryland. And there's a rundown on the subprime credit market by our banking correspondent, Emma Powell. And Alex Newman is actually taking a look at the showdown between North Sea producers, Faroe Petroleum, and Norway's DNO. And there's much more besides, obviously. But for now, it's goodbye from Simon, Harriet, and yours truly. Goodbye.